Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the radio program, Today's Issues, on the American Family Radio Network. Appreciate you listening to AFR. I'm Tim Wildman. We're going to be here for the next 90 minutes talking about what's happening in our country and in our world. We always try to do so through a Christian worldview lens, if you will. That's our goal and objective here, and we hope that you will appreciate that, and we hope that you will stay with us. Walker Wildman is co-hosting with me today. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. Good to be here.
What are we doing on social media?
Well, we are live streaming on Facebook and on YouTube, so you can go to both places and watch the show. And while you're on the Facebook page, you can find the links to all the news stories we talk about. And lastly, the last way to catch up with the show is to just visit AFR.net. AFR.net, you can listen live or you can listen to past shows there.
So if you want to watch the show, go to YouTube or Facebook and just type in Today's Issues live stream and you can watch the show there and comment on the program as That's well. Right. Dr. Ray Pritchard is with us. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Tim. How you doing?
Doing well. Yourself?
Hey, it's all good. I'm not in Dallas this morning. I'm up in Shawnee, Kansas, west side of Kansas City. A quick grandkid fix up here in Kansas City.
I hear you. A couple days
and heading back to Dallas.
Did y'all drive up?
Yep, drove up, and it's about 8 or 9 hours and drive back. But you know how it is. Sometimes the wife says we need a grandkid fix.
I understand.
Okay? This is the will of God.
We will drive 8 hours, 9 hours, whatever the case may be.
Won't even think about it. That's right.
I hear you. So you're using the magic of technology to sound like you're still in Dallas there.
This little box that AFR gave me, you plug it in and there's some kind of magic inside this box. I don't know how it works, but it works in Dallas and works up here in Shawnee as well. But Tim, good to have you back from the Holy Land. Did you have a good trip?
Thank you. Did have a good trip to the Holy Land. Was over there last week with 113 of my closest friends. And we had a wonderful time seeing Israel, and it was just a joy to see the looks on the faces of everybody as we went to the different places, and so many of the folks who went with us are AFA and AFR supporters, and it was great to spend time with them. It's always good to be back home too. When you're responsible for 113 people, it weighs on you.
That's some pressure.
It's a joy, but it's also when you get home, you're like, I can breathe now.
You stop at these places and there's always, right, you're on and off the bus a bunch, right? And there's always somebody, right? Or two or three somebodies and you're waiting and you're counting. You don't want to leave somebody at Beth Shan or on the boat on the Sea of Galilee.
Right.
You're counting heads all the time, making sure everybody.
Exactly. And you got weather that you can't know exactly what's going to happen there. And then, something going to. One time we had a sandstorm. This is the only time this has happened in the 24 years or so that I've been. But one time we had a sandstorm
A
sandstorm hit the whole country of Israel. Came in from Egypt and it stopped us from going to Masada. It was so thick. Right. I don't know if y'all remember that. But then again, that only happened one time. Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred Jackson.
Good morning. Yeah, I was going to ask. It must be scary if you get on the plane. There's 111.
Well, my Allison and me made 113. She's responsible for me on the trip. Somebody's got to watch me.
Saying everybody made it there and everybody made it back, as far as you know.
As far as I know. I haven't heard differently. But anyway, it was great. Hey, if you ever get a chance, folks, to go, whether you go with us or go with somebody else, go see the Holy Land because it'll
never be the same again.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah. Well, Fred, we got some more troubling news out of Texas.
Wow, I came in early this morning, and the headline was a package bomb at a FedEx facility in San Antonio. And I thought, okay, we've had four incidents in Austin since last week. So
bombing. Packages, just to be clear for people who have been paying attention, you're talking about packages that had been left at people's homes?
Yeah, these were the incidents last week. Folks go to their front porch,
right,
and there's a package there, and they say, okay. You know, they're used to maybe getting Amazon and FedEx packages, so they take it in, and in cases, and sadly, two people have died in the initial bombings. And one was a young man, and I think his mom were there, and they opened up this package, and
no motive and no leads that we know. Of course, the FBI wouldn't necessarily tip us off that they're onto something. But this happened again last night?
FedEx in San Antonio. It's a FedEx facility just, I think it's north of San Antonio. So I thought, okay, this person, if it's related, why did they move to San Antonio? But then the details started coming in. This was a FedEx package destined for Austin. In other words, it was moving through the facility, and by accident, it went off there. There was one gentleman who suffered some injuries. I believe he's going to be okay. But this was destined for Austin. Now, in the last hour or so, we are learning from authorities that police now have sent a hazardous materials team to a FedEx facility in Austin to check on another suspicious package there. Now, what authorities are saying at this point, they believe all of this, and we shouldn't be surprised by this, all of this is related, that there is one individual. But the difference on Sunday night's incident in Austin where two young men were hurt, it was a tripwire. They were on their bicycles. Okay, so it wasn't a package left at a front door. This was a package, I guess, in an alleyway somewhere. They drove their bike over a tripwire, and it went off. So now we're talking about someone, as the authorities are saying, this person has ability, technical ability to build these things. Not sure what happened in the FedEx facility last night, whether the way it was handled by the FedEx worker, whatever the case may be, caused it to blow. But the belief is the sender, whoever he is, meant for that thing to go to Austin and for the recipient to pick it up, open it up, and it would go off.
Yeah, this is the first. I'm looking, and Ray would know this off the top of his head, but it looks like San Antonio and Austin are about an hour and a half apart.
Right, they're pretty close.
Yeah, so in the big state of Texas, that's kind of right beside each other. But that tips off law enforcement that San Antonio, the guy's traveling. Obviously, he's either from Austin and drove to San Antonio, or is from San Antonio and drove to Austin, because four of the five bombs have gone off in Austin. Am I correct?
That's
and
correct.
The fifth bomb went off in a FedEx facility in San Antonio. But this is the first time that authorities actually have something to track. If there was a label on this box,
you know, I was just thinking about this, guys. Number one, this is a pretty sophisticated person doing this. This isn't just somebody, who got angry and then decided to go nuts. This whoever this is, or whatever group of people, they've got some technical ability, right? They've thought this thing through. Second, this is almost the perfect terror attack. So suppose you're in Austin today and the doorbell rings and you go to the door and there's a package there, right? You're going to think twice before you bend over and pick it up. Or suppose you're an Amazon delivery person or a FedEx truck driver. Maybe you don't even want to get into the truck this morning. So we talk about, you know, the whole point of a terror attack is to do something small in a way that has wide ramifications. And I was reading this morning, they've got 500 agents from different jurisdictions working on this, because this is how you shut down a whole city through fear, an attack like this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a great point. It paralyzed the city of Austin. And, you know, now packages, I was trying to think through this. I don't get many packages at home, but if I didn't know where the package, if I was not expecting a package, I certainly would not open it, especially now.
But if it says FedEx or Amazon, you know, you just think, okay.
Yeah, but I better know. I guess I'm saying I better. Either Allison, my wife, and one of our better have ordered something we're expecting. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. This is the bomber may have messed up here. I mean, when I say that, I mean that this package, the authorities are now saying they do not believe it was intended to go off in the FedEx facility. It was intended for Austin to explode in Austin.
When opened.
When opened. So the bomber may just have revealed where he's from. If he's been, if everything's going to Austin and all of a sudden one accidentally goes off in San Antonio.
But here's the problem with that now. FedEx or UPS, you know, or whatever, they have these little boxes that you don't have to go to a FedEx facility to mail your box. A drop-off location.
Right.
You can actually go online and you can print out your label. This is going, the label, the whole thing, stick it on the box yourself and take it to one of those drop-off boxes.
Okay.
And stick it in
Which there might not be anybody there.
I mean, that's why they have those boxes all over cities.
Right.
In a city like San Antonio, there'd be probably a lot of those boxes.
Let me bring something up. Not to, gosh, I hate to paint the worst case scenario here, but I'm thinking this could spread beyond Austin and San Antonio. Not only the possibility of copycat, but I thought all FedEx packages went to Memphis.
No.
Okay. UPS goes to Louisville. So they don't do that anymore.
No.
Right.
Okay. No. They've got substations now, like FedEx all over the country.
Yeah, okay. Distribution.
Now, a lot of stuff. Now, Memphis is the main hub for FedEx.
Sure.
But not all packages go through Memphis.
Okay.
Gotcha. So in this case, if it's a San Antonio to Austin, it would be trucked.
Right.
Okay. You see where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
Tim, you made a good point, too, about the copycats. I mean, we've seen that in these other, you know, shooting incidents, right, that somebody out there with a twisted mind in Boston or San Francisco or St. Louis.
Sees what's going on here.
That's exactly right, and think, I could do this, too.
Who knows? It could be, a 100 different or 1,000 different reasons why somebody would do something like this.
The only speculation I would have is this person has something against the city of Austin. Mm-hmm. I'm not an FBI agent.
Right.
I'm not police officer. But because Austin seems to be the center of attack for this individual, and it's very random. The first three bombings were in the east end of Austin, and the recipients were African-American and Hispanic. So there was an initial thought on motivation that it was somebody who didn't like minorities. The incident on Sunday night, the fourth incident Sunday night, was two young white men on the west side of Austin. So that kind of removed it from the hate crimes targeting minorities side of things.
Yeah.
And then I don't know the recipient on the label that went through FedEx at San Antonio last night. We don't know that yet.
I'm assuming the FBI is taking the lead here. Is that true?
Oh absolutely. The FBI is involved with it. This is a national investigation at this point.
There's 300 FBI agents in Austin.
Because of the sophistication of the operation.
Mm-hmm. They have been sent there.
Yeah, there's 300 just FBI. That's not including local law enforcement.
But they've got to be going through databases for individuals who would have experience in explosives. Because in these boxes, like the kids on Sunday night, there was nails in the boxes. And that's where they suffered
most
damage.
That's what ISIS does.
That's right.
Well.
Shrapnel.
Now, not that they would be the only ones that could do that, but I'm just saying that's typical of an ISIS-type attack is to inflict as much damage as possible with shrapnel. That's what they do in the airport. Remember the airports in Europe and so forth?
Mm-hmm.
But what I was getting at, I hate to even mention this, but if packages are flown, I mentioned FedEx in Memphis, and I think UPS is out of Louisville, aren't they?
That's correct, yeah.
You know, packages fly on planes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, mm-hmm. Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And so, all right, well, we really need to pray that they find this
person or persons.
Yeah, person, end this quickly because this could, I can't imagine living in Austin right now. You said there was a tripwire that two boys were riding their bikes?
The Sunday night incident. They were on
and
their
they
bike.
Think this is related.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Without doubt. Without
oh, yes.
Doubt.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this truly is the perfect terror crime that you shut down a whole city, and we spend the time talking about it here in the program. I mean, it's – if look, when we go home to Dallas, which is up the road from Austin, right? But we get packages all the time. Mm-hmm. So I just was sitting here thinking to myself, if we get home tonight and there's a package, You know, are you going to open it? At least you're going to stop and think about it, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And that's what the bad guys want.
Yeah.
They want spread paralyzing fear.
This is not to say that this happening anywhere is anywhere you would wish this on anybody, but
sure.
imagine this happening in New York or L.A., something like that. I mean, Austin's big enough, but, I mean, you talk about it happening.
Won't there be video? I mean, cell phone video or, you know, there's cameras everywhere. If somebody set up a tripwire,
That's what I'm wondering.
Well, the neighborhoods they're the least likely place to have cameras rather than
you mean like residential neighborhoods
downtown
where houses
more
are.
Likely, but,
right.
But
right.
you, the more this guy does this, and I hope he gets caught today, but the more he does this, the better chance he's going to have of being caught because people are looking out now.
If you're a FedEx guy today or UPS or U.S. mail delivery guy,
exactly
do you want to go to work today?
No, right. they're taking a sick day.
Do you want your dad or your brother going in today? I mean, like Ray, you're saying paralyzing or terrorizing, whatever you want to word you want to use is what's happening. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Issues, the name of the program. If you want to watch the show, you can go to Facebook or our Today's Issues page on Facebook and watch it live there or YouTube. We're now live video streaming on YouTube, so just type in Today's Issues live streaming. You can watch the show there, or you can listen on our app anywhere in the world on our AFR app. Take advantage of that. If you appreciate American Family Radio, but you're often get out of range of one of our towers across the country and you would want to go ahead and listen to AFR, get our app. It takes you about 60 seconds or so to download it and the app on your phone or your iPad or similar device, and then you can listen to AFR anywhere in the world, clear as a bell. And so take advantage of that. You're listening to Today's Issues. What's the next story, Fred?
Well, we're coming up on another deadline for a spending bill that Congress is trying to put together. Now, House Speaker Paul Ryan said this
morning. I've seen this movie, Fred.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen this movie
many times.
And all the sequels.
Yeah. Go ahead and tell me, Fred.
Anyway, House Speaker Paul Ryan saying this morning that he's hopeful that they can put together a package today. The deadline is on midnight on Friday.
Oh,
However, one remaining battle pits President Donald Trump against top Senate Democrat Chuck Schumer and other New York area lawmakers over, are you ready for this, a $900 million the legislators want for a new rail tunnel under the Hudson River. At the same
900 how much?
900 million.
Okay, that's almost $1 billion, isn't it?
Pretty well.
Yep.
And apparently the Democrats still are only willing to give the president $1.6 billion of the $25 billion that he wants for the wall. So I would say the optimism of House Speaker Paul Ryan of putting something together today or even by Friday with that kind of distance between Mr. Schumer and the president is highly unlikely.
These bills are utter disasters, and the Democrats should be happy. And here's why. The news of this bill broke a month ago, the terms of the agreement.
Is this a bill? Is this a bill?
Yeah, this is a spending bill.
Okay, is this a continuing resolution?
I'm not sure the technicalities behind it, but it is a long-term spending bill. I believe it's a year and a half or so.
Okay,
it's thankfully not a one-month spending bill. Like
it's aimed at getting them through the election.
Yes, it's going to get them through the election. But here are some things that are in the bill. There's $20 billion going towards infrastructure, which I'm not sure what that is exactly. And then there's a $10 billion insurance company bailout via Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
So the Republicans in Congress, the House and the Senate, are going to bail out the insurance companies because of Obamacare with $10 billion. Not 10,000, not 10 million, $10 billion. And then we're going to send $90 billion to the states affected by hurricanes.
I thought we already sent the hurricane affected.
We did. We've already sent billions to all the states affected, but this is going to be an additional $90 billion.
And the president is never going to sign a bill that only gives him $1.6 billion for a wall.
Right.
Because he wants 25, right?
He wants 25.
Right. So he might veto it?
Oh, Yeah, 1.6.
Has he said he was going to veto it?
That's crumbs.
Well, now, is this, let me ask you this, is this the, have the Republicans put their money in? In other words, is it the Republicans who are not giving the president money for the wall's already been constructed.
Yeah,
someplace.
Here's where the problem breaks down, and then we'll get Ray in on this.
Because you're the host of Exposing Washington, Walker.
Look, I've been through this budget process 100 times. I know exactly how it
you
works.
Tell us.
The House, Congress, the House of Representatives, the Republicans in there, they put together what is usually a very good spending package for the most part, a pretty conservative spending package. Okay. It funds the wall. It doesn't fund insurance company bailouts, etc.
The House Republicans.
Yes, the House Republicans put together what is usually a pretty good spending bill.
Okay.
Well, they send the spending bill over to the Senate.
Uh-huh.
And because Mitch McConnell, Senator McConnell, will not get rid of the 60-vote threshold, they have to have 9 Democrats who vote for the spending bill. So the conservative bill that gets sent over to the Senate is then torn absolutely apart by Senate Republicans and some Democrats. So they turn what is a good bill into a very bad bill in the Senate and put a lot of Democrat pet projects in there. And then the House, of course, always agrees with the Senate, and then the president signs it. Mm-hmm. So the breakdown here in the system is in the Senate. The Senate is the one putting a lot of the bad things in legislation.
So what's going to happen, Walker, when we come to the deadline and there's no bill?
Well,
when is the deadline again?
Midnight Friday.
Yeah, if they don't come to an agreement by Friday, the government will, quote, shut down. And I say that in quotes because the necessary operations of the government, such as military and law enforcement, will continue. Some parks might close.
Continue.
Right.
I get so confused with this omnibus and debt limit and spending bill. And, I mean, good night. What are we talking about now? What is this called?
Well, this is a long-term spending bill. So
how's our long-term?
Long-term, about a year or a year and a half. This will keep us from having to cross this bridge next month, which is a plus. But the thing is, they put bad stuff in the bill. So while it's good that it's going to be a long-term spending bill, it's unfortunate that it's such a bad bill.
Ray, you got any answers?
Well, here's at the end of this. If this bad bill reaches the president's desk, what's the smart play for him? Is it to veto it? Or let it just sit there, or is the smart play for him to sign it and say, I don't like this, but let's take this off the table and get past the midterm elections? I mean, there's a political calculus going on here too, right?
Yeah.
But I think, and there are some Democrats even admit this, if the government shuts down, in quotation marks, as Walker's referred to, the Democrats get blamed for this. And there are Democrats like a couple of the senators who understand this heading into an election year. President Trump needs $25 billion, and in the terms of a federal budget, $25 billion is not that much. He wants it for the wall. The issue here is, remember, he has offered 1.8 million Dreamers DACA, a pathway to citizenship. President Trump has offered that, but give me $25 billion for the wall.
Right.
I'm still not understanding where the Democrats win.
Because they don't want Trump to get credit for anything.
And they don't want a wall.
So anything right. President Trump right. is for, they're against no matter what.
Right.
Even if it means sticking it to the Dreamers.
Yeah.
And the Democrats are sticking it to the Dreamers. They say they're for. Mm-hmm. But if it means President Trump might get credit for their, quote, pathway to citizenship, then we're not going to do it. And that's what some of these Dreamers have said. These DACA folks said that the Democrats are playing games with our lives.
That's right.
And that's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely true. But we'll see if there's a price to pay for it in the fall for the Democrats. We shall return with Sandy Rios is going to be with us in just a few minutes here on Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We thank you for listening. Walker, Fred, and Tim, and Ray will return in just a minute. Stay with us.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Abraham Hamilton III.
The encouragement that I want to offer today is not to allow ourselves to wane in fervor and wane in zeal and wane in fidelity to the Lord as time passes.
We'll also talk with Bill Federer about his new book, Who is the King in America?
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Well, September weather in Washington, D.C. is generally very, very nice. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. Our June tour sold out. We've only got seats left for our September Spiritual Heritage Tour of Washington, D.C. and George Washington's Mount Vernon. Now, for all the information on this trip, just go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com, spiritualheritagetours.com. We're also going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. So if you want to do that tour as well, all the information, again, is available at spiritualheritagetours.com. Those trips, Williamsburg and Washington, are back-to-back. We're going to have a wonderful time with listeners from all over the country to American Family Radio on our Spiritual Heritage Tour in September. Again, for all the information, go to our website, spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
From Affirm Films, the studio that brought you Risen and War Room, comes Paul, Apostle of Christ. Two men challenged an empire in order to live out the gospel of Jesus Christ and spread their message to the world.
Where sin abounds, grace abounds more.
Starring Jim Caviezel. Paul, Apostle of Christ. Rated PG-13. May be inappropriate for children under 13. In theaters March 23rd. More information is available at paulmovie.com.
The Holy Cross Crusaders are giving its mascot the heave-ho, the Jesuit school deciding to retire its beloved knight. Explaining in a statement, the visual image of a knight in conjunction with the Crusader nickname could cause offense to Muslims by bringing up the realities of the religious wars and the violence of the Crusades. Interreligious understanding, that's what Holy Cross is calling it. The costumed mascot's also getting the boot, replaced with an interlocking H and C on a purple shield. In a bit of unrelated news, the Crusader student newspaper changed its name to The Spire. Followers of this commentary should not be surprised that Holy Cross capitulated to political correctness. It's infecting every nook and cranny of our society. If, in fact, Holy Cross wants to avoid offending Muslims, they might want to consider changing the name of the college, too. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on AFR. Hey, you can send us an email at this address, comments@afr.net. Comments@afr.net is your email address to contact us. Here at American Family Radio. Walker, we've got our Share-a-thon coming up in about a month, and we're asking for folks who listen to AFR to help us out, right?
Yes. We're asking for listeners who have been impacted by American Family Radio. Maybe you've been motivated to get more involved in the culture war, or maybe God's just impacted your life through American Family Radio. But we want to hear your testimony, and the way you'll do this is I'm going to give out a number, but once you call this number, you'll be able to leave a voicemail. And then we'll take that voicemail and maybe edit it a little bit and then play it during our spring.
So, for instance, you say, hello, I'm so-and-so from,
yeah,
I'm Tim from Tupelo, and I listen to AFR, and this is a story how it's impacted my life or whatever.
Exactly. Name and location. Okay. Name and city that you're from.
Okay.
So we know.
If they hear this during the Share-a-thon, it's Tim from Tupelo, I'm just going to tell you it's me. I'll just go ahead and tell you.
Yeah.
But that would be kind of self.
I really enjoy those testimonies.
Yeah, me too.
Ma, yep. They're powerful.
They are.
You hear about people, I was just scanning the dial.
Yeah.
And I came across your station and I haven't left it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Here's the number to call to leave your listener testimony. 877-876-8893. 877-876-8893.
So you call that number and you leave your testimony. It's a voicemail. So
that's
nobody's
right.
gonna be there to answer to take your phone call. You're just gonna leave a voicemail.
Right.
What's the number again?
877-876-8893.
If you have an AFR testimony story, please call and let us hear from you. Call that number Walker gave, because it's edifying to all the other listeners, especially people who write checks to American Family Radio. and then they hear that we're having an impact on people's lives through our broadcasting, and that encourages everybody.
Mm-hmm. Right, including there, us.
Yeah, exactly, especially during our share-a-thon. Ray Pritchard with us from Kansas City, Ray's away from his Dallas home today visiting grandchildren, but he took the little box with him, and now he sounds like he's back home.
Yeah, the magic box, yeah.
The magic box.
I don't know what they do. No. I don't know. There's a bunch of people in there doing something.
It's amazing.
Leprechauns or something anyway, but it's working, whatever they're doing in there.
He's getting carried away.
Yeah.
So did you say, is it Suwannee? Suwannee, Kansas?
Shawnee, Kansas.
How far west of Kansas City is that?
Oh, we're right on the west side. You know, there's Kansas City, Missouri, and then there's Kansas City, Kansas, and we are right up next to Kansas City, Kansas.
Is that near Overland Park?
Yeah. Oh, there's Shawnee, and then there's Lenexa and Overland Park. They all just kind of on top of each other.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Sandy Rios is with us. Sandy's host of Sandy Rios in the Morning. That's the radio program from 7:05 to 8 o'clock Central Time each weekday morning here on American Family Radio. Sandy's also a director of governmental affairs for us here at American Family Association. And Sandy, good morning to you.
Good morning to you back.
Thanks for being on with us. What do you think of, let me ask you this. We've talked, Sandy, with you about Attorney General Jeff Sessions. He left the Senate, obviously, to be the Attorney General for President Trump. And President Trump, you know, has been critical of the Attorney General, but yet he remains. And we've sort of been waiting for him to start doing some things that we know Jeff Sessions would do if he were, you know, if he was given time. And it turns out he's starting to do some very good things, isn't he?
He is. And actually, Tim, I think he's been doing a lot of good things. We just didn't know about them because, as I've said before, he's a man who does not brag. He actually does. He doesn't talk about it much, but he's doing a lot of different things. And when you consider that his major heads of the Justice Department have yet to be voted on by the Senate. Thank you, Mitch McConnell. He has really just got he's working, operating on a shoestring of people in the Justice Department of over 1,000 employees. He just has a handful of people on his team. And so when you consider all of that, it's remarkable what he's doing. And of course, the firing of Andrew McCabe was gutsy and necessary. And so
for those who don't know exactly the reason, why did Attorney General Jeff Sessions fire what in essence is one of his top lieutenants in the Justice Department? I mean, Andrew McCabe, what was his title?
He was the deputy FBI director.
Okay, that's pretty. I mean, he's in meetings with the Attorney General on a daily basis. They see each other going down the hall. They know each other, and yet he fires him 2 days before he's going to get his pension. So it must have been a very serious violation that the Attorney General saw.
Well, the way yes, the answer is yes, yes, and yes. They're reporting two reasons, but I have to say, Tim, that, you know, as an employer yourself of a lot of people, you know that when someone it's not working out for various reasons, maybe there are several, you will choose like one or two of the main, and that's what you'll go on paper with. This is why you're letting a person go. And I think when we hear the whole story about Andrew McCabe, it's going to be shocking, to be honest with you. The two things that they are firing him for, they're saying, is that he leaked information to the press, and then secondly, that he did not honest in testimony. And by the way, my understanding, he did that more than one time before Congress and in other venues where he was sworn to tell the truth. And FBI agents have a very high standard for truth. I mean, you can say what you will about their reputation under Mueller. I could say plenty myself. But this one thing is true. They cannot lie. If they are caught lying on their time cards, lying about how they use their bureau car, lying about anything, they will be fired. So that's standard operating procedure. And Andrew McCabe, of course, lied under oath when he was giving testimony. So those are the two given reasons, but there are a lot of other things. The other thing I think needs to be explained is when he's part of the FBI, which is under the umbrella of justice. So yes, Attorney General Sessions is his ultimate boss. The president is his ultimate boss, but Attorney General Sessions would be the next one down. There's an Office of Professional Responsibility that the FBI has, and they're the ones, this whole place is what reviews misconduct of FBI agents and employees. There's an investigative branch and there's an adjudicating branch. And the investigative branch was given information about McCabe from the inspector general, who has nothing to do. I mean, he's sort of an independent person. And he brought charges against Andrew McCabe. The Office of Professional Responsibility has spent now the last, I think he's been under investigation since last summer. So they've spent all this time now investigating, and then they turned it over to the adjudicators, who are also FBI employees, and they recommended that Andrew McCabe be fired. So Attorney General Sessions acted upon their recommendation. So I know that's complicated, but honestly, that's the way it went down.
Sandy, it's Fred here. So now we've learned, hey, since Andrew McCabe was fired, he's let it, you know, he's gone to the media, and he's crying, you know, I've been done wrong. And by the way, I took notes of my meetings with President Trump. Now, we've heard this before from James Comey. And so there are some who say, you know, that Mueller's investigation based on to a point on the wrongdoings of Andrew McCabe and James Comey, therefore, the president should end Mueller's investigation. But you got some Republicans joining the Democrats saying, no, no, you can't do that. Just like your thoughts on that.
You know, I've never understood that, Fred, to be honest with you. From the very beginning, I never understood the enthusiasm for Robert Mueller. That was a mystery because he has a history of mishandling his cases. He was also very close to James Comey. They were buddies. And now he's supposed to be investigating the firing of James Comey? That should have been a complete disqualifier. So knowing that what I knew about Bob Mueller's record, not the least of which was overseeing the scrubbing of FBI manuals when it came to Islam and jihad and all of that, plus his life, his record in corporate America handling various cases is not a good one. And yet they raved, oh, he's wonderful. He is a man of integrity. He's above reproach. Well, that's really not true. If that were true, he would never have taken the job because he knew that James Comey was a very good friend of his. So this whole thing has been completely misrepresented. As far as the president letting him go, I thought he should have replaced him a long time ago. I wanted that to happen personally because I didn't think that people – how could people hate President Trump anymore? Well, now – seriously. So now we have all these Republicans who are getting as loud and shrill as the Democrats are on not replacing Mueller because he's such a man of integrity and he must see this thing through. Trey Gowdy on Fox News Sunday was really ridiculous from my perspective.
I didn't understand that. He's a pit bull normally, and now he's out there cheerleader for Mueller.
Let me just say this, Fred. Trey Gowdy wants to be a pit bull. Trey Gowdy is really, as people in Washington would say, is all hat and no cattle. He talks a good game. He presents well. And sometimes he talks and you go, wow, but he's all hat and no cattle. And I would point you to his oversight of the Benghazi investigation. It was really
went nowhere.
A dereliction of duty. And I know personally what happened there. And he talked a good game, but really did nothing. Yeah. So he's not to be trusted. That's all I can say.
Sandy, thanks so much for being on with us. What are you going to talk about tomorrow morning on your show?
I'm going to talk about the omnibus, Tim, because they're going to work on that by midnight.
What time will you be talking about that? Because I want to tune in.
Well, I've been talking about it.
I can't get me enough omnibus.
You know what? You know, if you found out they were going to fully fund Planned Parenthood and that they were going to save Obamacare and that they were going to pass gun control legislation, it's a nightmare, Tim, what they're getting ready to do.
Yeah. Oh, and but also that's what they always do. That's what they always do. And the reason...
Oh, not this bad. This is a $1.3 trillion bill that the Republicans are overseeing.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. This could be stopped this could possibly be stopped, and the only way it could be stopped if the Republicans would quit allowing the Democrats to force to have 60 votes to pass anything. Is that right?
It's not in this case. That would be part of it, Tim. But I think it's gotten worse than that because right now, See, the conservatives, especially in the House, had some leverage because Paul Ryan was sort of pledged to them that if he didn't have the support of all of his all of the Republicans for a certain piece of legislation, he wouldn't bring it forth. Well, now he's working with Democrats. So they're working with Democrats on this spending bill, and it means that it doesn't matter what the Freedom Caucus and other conservatives think. They are being just – they're not even part of the negotiation on this. Paul Ryan is negotiating with the Democrats.
Why?
Let's see. I'm not sure I can answer that. I could. I could say that he wants to – I don't think he cares. I think also certainly when it comes to amnesty and
– he didn't care about what?
He doesn't care about – obviously he has overseen some of the worst legislation, or he has either that in addition to he has done nothing during his time as Speaker of any value besides past tax cuts. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, really, he's had stewardship of the House, and he has produced hardly anything. And he, Mr. Pro-Life, you know, elected as a Mr. Pro-Life from Wisconsin, is going to oversee fully funding Planned Parenthood. They're also leaving out conscience protections, Tim, for healthcare workers. I could go on and on. They're bailing out Obamacare when it's about to die on the vine. So why
I give up then.
Well, you can't.
I mean, I know you can't, but I am for right now. For the next 15 minutes, I'm giving up.
Well, you know what? I've been asking people to call their House members and tell them, vote no, for heaven's sake, and asking the president to veto this.
Yeah.
This is a ridiculous bill. Yeah, so.
Okay, yeah. Thanks, Sandy. Appreciate it. Keep up the good work.
Okay, thanks, Tim. Talk to you soon.
It does get discouraging. I understand what you're...
Is Sandy gone?
Sandy's gone.
Okay. Because... I've hurt her feelings before. I call her Debbie Downer, and she, you know, she's just calling it like she sees them. But sometimes I don't want to hear that. You know, I want.
Well, you get cynical with it because you deal with what is the same problem over and over and over and over again, and you wonder, you ask yourself, why don't they pass a 20-year spending bill that funds all of the bad stuff? Because they fund the same bad stuff every 6 months.
Here's the frustration conservatives had. When President Obama first was elected 2008.
By the way, Ray is co-hosting with us today.
Hi, Ray.
Hey, guys. Look, I'm so depressed. You know, really, where do we go from here? Because the problem with what Sandy said is it's not wrong. She's totally right.
Right? She's right. I mean, but here's the thing that irks conservatives. President Obama gets elected 2008. The Democrats have the House and the Senate, and they move mountains. Obamacare.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
They do whatever they want, and they get done what according to their agenda. Republicans, 2016, they get the White House, they get the House, they get the Senate, and it's twiddle thumbs, and oh, my goodness, what are we going to do? You know, Harry Reid, when he headed up the Senate, guess what? Filibuster out the door, 50 votes, that's it. We need to get this done.
For the federal judges.
Right.
Federal judges.
Yeah.
But the White House personnel officer came up in the White House briefing last week and went down the list, and Sandy alluded to this, of some of the president's nominees for Justice Department. They have been waiting since the get-go, since Inauguration Day, to get a hearing. You know what Chuck Schumer's doing? He's applying the 30-hour rule on all of these things. And they compared to what the Republicans did for Barack Obama, President Barack Obama, when he was in the White House. The Republicans did away with the 30-hour debate rule. Right. Sure, you can have that person rubber stamp, rubber stamp, rubber stamp, rubber stamp. Chuck Schumer saying, no, going to be 30 hours for each one when we get around to it.
Well, and McConnell's allowing it.
And McConnell's allowing
it. Right. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ray. What would McConnell have to do to stop it?
Here's the problem.
Stop what?
Here's the problem. We have at least two senators who are non-existent in Washington, and that's a problem. We have Senator John McCain, and I feel I'm not downplaying his health problems, but I'm just saying he has not worked in 6 months. He has been in Arizona.
How old is John McCain?
He's I believe 80 or 81.
Retire.
He's in Arizona. He has not been stepped foot in Washington in months, so he's not there to vote. You have to be in the chamber to vote. Number two, Senator Thad Cochran of our state of Mississippi has been in and out of Washington for months.
He is retiring.
He is retiring, thankfully. But when you have a very, very thin margin, then you can't. The reason I mentioned those two is you need 51 votes to bypass some of these rules, like the 30-hour debate rule, the filibuster. You need 51. Well, guess how many Republican senators we have? 51. Mm-hmm. You rally up your caucus. You say, we're going to get this done. You vote in the 30-hour debate rule, get rid of the filibuster, and you can start getting things done.
Yeah.
But when you have two senators out on vacation back in their home states and they're not even working.
Well, they're not on vacation.
They're not on vacation, but they're not working.
They're not there for health reasons or for other reasons. They're not. They're missing an action in their work, and they need to retire. If
you can't carry out your duties on a normal fashion, maybe you miss a week or here or there.
Yeah.
But if you cannot be in Washington to vote, you should not hold the position.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that really troubled me. What Sandy was saying about House Speaker Paul Ryan. Mm-hmm. I've heard this story a thousand. What the Republicans are going to tell you. They're going to tell you, correct me if I'm wrong, Walker, Fred, Ray, whatever. They're going to tell you that this is all they can do. They're doing all they can do.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And given the fact that the Democrats have so close a margin in the Senate that they can block anything the House Republicans pass, that the House Republicans then have to pass something that they can get enough votes in the Senate, including the Democrats, at least 8 of them, to pass. Am I right? Is this what they're going to tell you?
That's what they'll say, yeah.
That's what they're going to tell you.
In a way, don't you sometimes feel the Democrats are better at this political stuff than the Republicans are?
Well, they agree, act right. as a team. Along with the McCain and Thad Cochran problem for the Republicans in the Senate, you've got Susan Collins, who is a Republican who really wears the Democrat Party
you
hat.
You've got Jeff Flake.
Jeff Flake, Corker, they all hate Donald Trump, and they're trying to be as miserable as they can.
Right.
Well, again, do I want to say this again? But the filibuster, allowing the filibuster in the United States Senate, gives the Republicans no chance.
That's right.
To pass anything that they would otherwise, that they potentially have the numbers to pass if you just took a straight up vote. But again, I know we've bored y'all with this before. By y'all, I mean listeners.
Yeah.
The Republicans, the majority of the Senate Republicans are in favor of the filibuster. That means they're in favor of allowing the Democrats to block them every time.
Yeah.
That means if you lose in November seats in the House,
which is a very real possibility, right?
Yes. Because you're losing because of inaction on your part. The inaction on your part, Republicans, is because you're in favor of the inaction. Because you're in favor of allowing 8 Democrats to block everything you do. In the name of, well, Tim, one day the Democrats are going to be in the White House, and we're going to be glad we're able to block them. You know what? The 60 votes is a Senate rule. It's not even in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. I think, personally, it thwarts the will of the people. If you want to argue with me that the founding fathers did not set up this country to have a supermajority to pass anything.
Right.
If that would have been a great idea, don't you think the founders would have put that in the rules?
They mentioned on a handful of occasions why you need a supermajority.
For example.
Treaties and impeachment, things like that. So you know the discussion came up to our founding fathers, should we include legislation for a supermajority? And they all said no, absolutely not.
So what's going to happen is there's a likelihood, as Ray just said, we were talking of the Republicans losing some seats in the fall in the Senate and or the House, and if they because of inaction, and I don't have any, I don't feel sorry for them because the inaction is something they want.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, it does.
That they've signed up for. Yeah. So that makes you think. Now here comes the cynical side of me. Okay, this makes me think that some Republicans like that.
Yes,
they want inaction. They want to have the filibuster. That means those are Republicans who don't have to take hard votes.
Right, they're off the hook.
They throw their hands up and go, guys, we'd love to do what you want to do by ending the funding for Planned Parenthood, but we can't because we can't get 60 votes in the Senate. We're just so sorry. That's just a political reality. and I want to go. And who's allowing the 60 votes? Mm-hmm. Well, we are. Well, why are you doing that to yourself? Because we want to be gentlemen, and we want to allow, you know, we want to get a majority. We want to get some Democrats on our side. We think bipartisanship's a good thing. Really? So you get nothing done, then you lose seats, and that's somehow a good thing.
Right.
Huh?
Right.
There you go. So I think a lot of these Republicans, that's the swamp. That's how the game's played. It's a game. It's a game for these people. All they care about is maintaining their power in Washington, and they don't really care in the end who wins, as long as they maintain their own personal power.
This goes back to the point Walker made earlier. I mean, if you just take
ideology. I just made a very good point, Ray. I'd like you to credit me first, and then you can credit my son.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, Tim, you made an excellent point.
Thank you.
And then going back to the even more wonderful point.
Thank you, Ray.
Well, because this, Tim, you said it's a game, and you're right. So ask yourself a question. Between McConnell and Schumer, just take ideology out of it. Take party out of it. Who plays that game better? Doesn't Chuck Schumer play the political game better? Because if the roles were reversed, the Democrats wouldn't hesitate to do just what you said, to get rid of the 60-vote rule, to get what they want through.
So. Yeah, the game, it makes me think. I'm just going to say this. This is my own personal opinion, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. It makes me think that Mitch McConnell, the Senate leader of the Republicans, he doesn't really care. He doesn't really care about winning on major issues of our time and getting the people's work done that they voted on for President Trump. He just wants to be a power broker in Washington, and he's a power broker whether the Republicans or the Democrats are in charge. Mm-hmm. He gets a lot of I'm sorry. That's just the way that I see this. And
Well, I tell people on my show so we don't get discouraged. It is discouraging in the moment, but I tell folks this is a long-term fight. This is not a one-year fight. Getting the swamp out of D.C. is not a one-year fight because it didn't take them 1 year to get there.
I know, but let me tell you what happens. Excuse me for interrupting you, but I'm your father.
and we're doing Star Wars.
We're doing Star Wars here. Let me tell you what happens. What is discouraging, my son, is that what happens, human nature takes over, and you elect people like we did in the Tea Party movement, and slowly but surely they go up to Washington, and what happens? They grow swamp grass on their feet.
Yeah.
That's
and
right.
You know, that's just what happens. They like being called Mr. Congressman too.
Yeah.
They like getting that money back to the district too, and people saying what a wonderful man you are for bringing this money back to our district and helping.
That's one problem. There's two angles to this. That's the first problem. The second problem is voters have short-term memory.
Yeah. True.
We have short-term memory because listen to this. In 2020, Mitch McConnell will run for his Senate seat again. He's already. Yeah. Well, he may retire.
Two years from now?
Yeah, assuming he runs in 2020 for his Senate seat again, he will run as a conservative, as a hardcore conservative, and he will make voters in Kentucky forget his entire past 6 years, and they will think he is the greatest thing that ever walked
because
on earth.
Because he's the incumbent, he'll get all kinds of money for his campaign, and anybody who challenges him will get crumbs.
That's how the game's played. Yeah. That's inside baseball.
Yep.
That is how the swamp works. And, you know, you can just try to expose it and try to get people of conviction, you know. Mm-hmm. Into office, but it's a real problem. It's a human nature problem because people love power, and man, you get up to Washington and you go in with all the right intentions, and then you know you look up, and 10 years later, you're part of the problem. That's what's happened to a large extent. We shall return after the news with more happiness. You stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.